welcome to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. In this podcast, we discuss mystical works of literature and how they relate to recovery. We hope you enjoy today's podcast episode.
Hello, this is Buddy C. Welcome to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. Any announcements? Go to buddyc.org. Lots of resources there. Recently simplified the menu so that you're able to get things a little easier. Got the bookstore and most of the books, if not all, that we discuss here. Some other resources, apps and links and all kinds of things there for you. Also have a Tao recovery quote devotion of the day. I hope it's helpful to you. If you want to try it out, the link's there to sign up for that. Today, instead of doing a verse of the Tao Te Ching, we're going to hear Oscar's story. Oscar, I'll turn it over to you. Oscar, how's recovery working for you?
I'm Oscar, and I'm an addict. And I guess I'm an alcoholic, too. I mean, a member of, active member of Cocaine Anonymous Fellowship in the Netherlands and Ireland. I'm in the program since about 2 years, and since something like 20 months, I'm sober, which is, in my life of 53 years, a miracle, and it's really a long time for me to be completely sober without any mind-altering substance. Where do I start with this? I come from average parents, average family, nothing really special. It was good, it was nice, it was quiet, it was a normal village life. And I remember from really early age that I felt really strange about this world, about people, about how we behave, about time. I really felt strange about time. I really felt strange about thinking, thoughts. I didn't understand anything of it. And I saw everybody, I thought everybody was other, not like me, because they were all, in my opinion or my perception, they were all acting normal, like it is normal where we live. I had strange fantasies, which I still remember that it was a thought or a fantasy, but I was convinced that this life is not real, that it's a dream of something, I don't know what it was. I imagined a kind of animal, like a deer or something, and it was all playing in the deer's head, and the whole world and universe were in the deer's head. And I had these fantasies of a world in a world and a dream in a dream and all kind of things like this. But I was also a very social kid, I really liked acting and making plays and writing. And at an early age, I decided I wanted to be an actor. And this was after my parents divorced, which was the first trauma in my life. And my father left. And then I started smoking marijuana, 14 or 15 or something. And I got involved into a relationship with sexual abuse from a man who gave me the drugs. And it went on for about a year. And I kept this very secret. And I escaped in drugs, in marijuana, hashish on daily basis since I was 14 years old. And then very soon cocaine and ecstasy and all kind of things. But I wanted to be an actor, so I went to theater school, and then I learned drinking, and I also learned the profession. So I always had this since I know I had this double life, one part was on drugs and one part was as a kind of an artist or a career, hunting for a career and for success and for money in this field of society. And as a mainly as a writer, actor, and I had a theater company after the theater school. I had a theater company since I was 21 or 22, which was very successful. And then I was this avant-garde writer in the Netherlands. And I wrote in a career of about 15, 16 years, I wrote 50 plays. So I was really productive. And at the same time, I had a heroin and crack addictions on daily basis, because with heroin, it's quite simple. You use it all the time or you don't do it. And heroin was for me the real homecoming. I like all drugs. I liked everything. I liked tripping. I liked everything. But heroin was the biggest, because it's a painkiller. And I didn't feel anything anymore. So I really thought it was great. And I worked really hard. And I used this on a daily basis. But I, of course, after mistakes, but at a certain moment, you know how much you need. And it just methadone. And I was my own doctor in this. And it was self-prescription and self-buying. But that's how I did it. And then at the same time, I was really working really hard and quite successful. And then after 15 years, I was broken. I was wasted. I slept, I think, except for work, I slept all day. And I had two children. I also had a family. So I had this third layer. So I had a family, I had my work, and I had my addiction. It was insane. And then I couldn't continue with this anymore. And I had some attempts to stop, but it didn't work. And it was not 12 steps. So I really came 2 years ago only in 12 steps program. And before that, it was all other kind of things. Therapists, psychiatrists, all of them. And then I was so wasted that I knew a therapist who really could reach me, and she slowly started talking about a rehab, which was for me really impossible. I thought I can't go to rehab. I have my work, I have my family, and I'm not really an addict, which is insane. But she slowly worked me through that. And then I went my first summer in rehab, which was a summer of 2 months. And I had said, I can only go 2 months and only summer, because we had a world tour with theater plays from September till December. And I wanted to do this. So these were the first 2 months. And I was 36 or something like that, 36. And I had used from 13 on daily basis. And this was the first 2 months that I was sober. And I thought it was amazing. I really thought it was amazing. The first month was a hell, because I came in with a methadone habit and a heroin habit. And they had told me, you have to come in clean. But I didn't do that. And I got sick there and I detoxed. But it was impossible. It was not allowed to detox there. So it was illegal detox, and they just put me in the field and let me work with the vegetables. And I was there with the three coats on, shaking there. And it was not a 12-step program. It was anthroposophical. So it was based on spirituality, but not very obvious. And it was my first encounter with spirituality. And I thought it was really strange. I didn't know anything about it. But they gave me, somebody gave me a present when I went to the rehab. And it was a book which was just translated in Dutch. It was the Zhuangzi, which is the not the Tao Te Ching, but the Zhuangzi is the second book of Taoism. And I didn't know anything about this, about Taoism. But I started, and in the re-up, we had to make this drawings from plants for 15 minutes on your room every day. But I couldn't do it because I was too nervous and too shaky, and I couldn't do it. But I started reading, and I like reading a lot. So I found more rest in reading this, and I started to read that Chinese literature. And I was really, I fell really for it, really hard. I thought, what is this? This is, there are all kind of thoughts which refer to me, which I recognized. I just thought, this is how I see the world. I didn't, for instance, the way they talked about feelings and about emotions and thoughts, that was exactly how I thought about it. I thought, why do we make this so important in our society, our feelings? It's nothing. It's really nothing. And then I read this book slowly, the first pages, and had this huge recognition with it, but not the smartness to continue any study or something. But there was a kind of spiritual spark started there. And then after these 2 months, I went back and I went on world tour, and it went fine. And I was clean and I didn't drink, and I was the best company ever. Since 15 years in my company, everybody enjoyed my company. So because I was more funny and it was better to be with me than all the time before. So it was really good, and I had really good memories about this. But then we came back in December in the Netherlands, and it was Christmas and it was empty. And then suddenly I found myself on the street again, and it happened. Like in the big book, the glass of milk. It pops in my head and I do it. And I somewhere fakely, I know it is not a real good idea, but let's do it. And then I didn't know how to use the right amounts anymore. So I OD'd 3 times, and I don't know how I survived this. It was really weird. I have gaps that I really felt my heart was like fading away or stopping, or I don't know. And then a blackout, and then hours later, waking up somewhere else. And no idea how I survived it. But at a certain moment, my wife said, and my colleague said, okay, you have to go back to the clinic. And they had the door open in the clinic, because they thought 2 months for this man is a bit tricky. They didn't say that to me, but I heard it afterwards. And then I came in and I surrendered to the program for 1 year. So I went 1 year in rehab, which was possible at that time. It's not anymore for 1 year. It's not possible anymore. So I went in for 1 year, and then I got a divorce in that year. I sold my house. I left Amsterdam. So I prepared all this for the second year when I went out of the clinic. So this happened during the year in the clinic. And in the clinic, you get this, slowly you get more tasks to do. And at a certain moment, I had a task to go to the library for everybody. And I had this list. These books came to my room, and I supplied them to the other people. And someone asked for Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now, and I really thought it was crap. I didn't read it, but I thought, I knew it was crap because it was too easy. Yeah, the Power of Now, of course. But this book he had ordered, and I came back from the library, and the guy disappeared. So it was a clinic, so it was a rehab, so people disappear sometimes. But I had this book in my room, and then I started reading it, and I had the same recognition as with Sun Tzu. Okay, this is how it is. Here is reality is written. So that was a kind of second encounter with spirituality on an experience level. So it was more than just the knowledge. It was recognition, really recognition. And then I came out, then I had a third experience, which was really amazing. I was out of the clinic and I was, riding my bicycle and suddenly I experienced that there was no difference between me riding the bicycle at that moment as me 5 years ago, as me 10 years ago, as me as a kid, that there was something inside me which was always the same. And then I stopped and I recognized this is timeless. I'm a timeless being. I didn't thought I was a timeless being. I thought there is something timeless in me. And that was really amazing. But I didn't know what to do with all these things. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know how to integrate it in life. I thought my life taking a revenge on the real bad first part of my life. This time I want to do a new family and I wanted to do it good. And I wanted to show the world that I could do it. And so all this kind of not moral or spiritual motive entered in my behavior. And I thought, I got to know another woman, wherewith I had my third daughter. And so I have three daughters now, and in a double life, I started smoking marijuana again. So I had a relapse of marijuana, but very low level. I smoked one joint in the evening before going to sleep, but nobody knew. I didn't tell anybody. I quit drinking. I was sober, and I told everybody how good I was doing, but I had this double life. I was doing good, but I had a double life, and it was not. And also, my motives to be with this woman were not correct. Do you want to ask a question?
Yeah. Were you working a program at this time? What were you doing as far as?
After the clinic, I was dropped. I didn't do any program anymore. I changed careers. I started farming. So I started to study farming, but it had nothing to do with recovery. So it was the idea in the rehab was 1 year rehab, then 1 year aftercare, and then slowly they let you go. And that was what happened. And then I moved from that part of the Netherlands to where I now live. And I really sincerely thought I was healed. I didn't have the perception or knowledge that addiction is a disease. First of all, I didn't know that. I thought it was behavior. And a second thing, I didn't know it was incurable.
How old were you at this time, Oscar?
About 40 years old.
Okay, so about 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, it's 12 years ago. My daughter is 11 years old now. So something like that. I started doing this marijuana, and I had this marriage, which was not a good marriage, but I stayed with her because first there was pregnancy, then there was a little kid, then my wife got cancer, so I didn't dare to leave, but it was really bad, and it was a really bad relationship. So when the cancer was cured, as far as you can say this, she got slowly better, and then at a certain moment I thought, okay, now I have to go. And she didn't want me to go, she said, because she had been sick from chemotherapy, and so she said we need to go in therapy. So we went another year in therapy, but it didn't work, and then we separated. And when we separated, there was a door was open to more drugs. And again, experimenting and slowly starting drinking. And I was 10 years clean. And so I was 10 years without other substances than this one joint a day. And I slowly started again. And then, long story short, in a relatively short time until Corona came, and then Corona came, I went on designer drugs and I started buying on the dark web crack cocaine. And then when I was on crack cocaine, I really went all the way down. And it went really hard. So I had a crack episode of, I don't know exactly, but it must have been somewhere between 7-8 months, something like that. So a short year. And I was really insane. I was really crazy and psychotic. And there are whole periods in these months that I don't remember. I don't remember what I did. My wife, I have a new wife now, and she tells me stories about this, which I don't remember. I don't remember how I was. I don't remember how I behaved. I don't remember how I took care of my daughter, because she was 1 week with me, and I don't remember how I talked with family. I was really insane. And everybody was surprised. Nobody understood what was happening to me. Until it all went open, because I started using at home and I just found it. And then I was forced more or less into a detox again. And before that detox, I went to my first meeting of Cocaine Anonymous here, and it was a men's group, and I came in the men's group, and I felt a life vest. I felt they threw a life vest at me. I felt, okay, here is something that can save me. I don't know what it is. I don't understand it. But somewhere I remembered, okay, there is a life vest there. I went to a couple of relapses again, so short period relapses, until my last relapse in August. What was it? August 21? No, August 22. August 22. It's 24 now, right? I'm 20. I don't know exactly. It's in August, and I'm 20 months. And important is, okay, at a certain moment, all my family said, you have to go to a rehab again. And I didn't want that because of I thought that's not the solution, can't come from outside. The solution somewhere has to be incorporated in me. And when I go to rehab, I'm going to be the best kid of class during this period. And then I have to go home, and then I'm lost again. So I have to find something to incorporate in my life and to change everything from within. And then I went with my wife to Italy for 4 weeks and detoxed myself there. So it was the first week of detoxing, like really sleeping actually. And then 3 more weeks to prepare to go home. And then I started watching YouTube films about 12 steps program. I started attending groups on Zoom, and I started to read Big Book for the first time in my life. And then it really came in, thanks to all the people who make all the clips, like yourself, make the podcasts. I really had a lot listening, a lot of help listening to all these 12 steps, which are to find on online. It's really amazing. And they really, that introduced me in what the Big Book is actually. And then I realized, okay, 12 steps are not 12 steps and then you're ready. The 12th step says you're going to live the rest of your life with these steps, with those steps. So I thought there is a toolbox. It's a toolbox. And to get this toolbox, I have to go to the meeting and I have to find a sponsor. And then later on, I learned, okay, now I have to do service and just follow the suggestions and then let the process do the work. That much I understood. And I was really happy with it because for the first time, I thought, okay, spirituality or slash God is the solution. And that is literally what the big book is about. And I always thought God was something outside of me. It was me, there's me and my life, and there's God. But it doesn't have so much to do with each other. So it was really a revelation that I thought, okay, but our second step says God is the solution. There is a higher power. There could be a higher power is enough. There could be a higher power that can make me sane again. And that's what I started to believe in.
Let me ask you a question. Now, growing up, did you go to church at all, or did you have any kind of spirituality growing up? Was that ever addressed?
Nothing. No, it was never addressed, and it was atheist. Not really. Also, it was not a subject, actually. God was not a subject. Religion was not a subject. It was just science, arts, and a lot of rationality and opinions were really important. Discussions, like discussions about politics. It was really society, how to the world, economics. That was really what's capitalism.
I imagine that your realization that there was something greater, that was, I imagine that had quite an impact on you and how you approach this from that point forward. You know, that, wait a minute, this is like your realization on the bicycle.
Yeah.
That may have been the beginning of that.
Yeah, for me, that was the beginning because I had a reference point. And also the Zhuangzi, I had a reference point. And I have read the Bible and I've read the Quran. So I had my reference points. But it was always outside of me except the time on the bicycle. And since the time on the bicycle, I recognized inspiration in my work. You need inspiration, which means in spirit. I thought, that's a connection with God. And I also recognized that as a connection with God. And with enthusiasm, it's the same. Enthusiasm literally means connection with God. And I feel this when I'm enthusiastic about something. I feel something lifted up in me. And now that I look at it, I see, okay, without the ego, enthusiasm is really a thrill in a body. It's a connection with God and the body. Only the enthusiasm is interpreted by the ego, and it's my enthusiasm and so on, but I always felt this as a connection with God. And then I came in. So God was not for me. It was not taboo. I was happy when I understood the second step of the 12 steps. I thought, okay, yes, I'm convinced, definitely. And the third step, which was for me, I loved to do it. We have these cards with CAA, with Cocaine Anonymous, that when we come in, we read that we don't come into meetings to find God. But I was kind of exception in this. I really came to find God. I really knew before I started the program in the live meetings and so on, I knew from my preparation, it was all about God. That's what I had to do here. And I really was convinced that it could save me. This was what could save me. And change everything. And that's why I also think I went so fast into the program. So I really did the steps fast because I wanted to get to the 12th step. I wanted to help other people. I wanted to carry a message. I really was motivated and I thought, okay, this is what is going to save me. And now I'm here and I'm doing, I do this meeting. This is my third meeting today. So I do one in the morning really early, which is a Cocaine Anonymous meeting. Then I have a kind of book club on Saturday where we read the book up, big book. And then I have this as my third meeting sometimes. And so my Saturday is really the day of spirituality. And apart from this, I do live meetings on Tuesday and Friday and online meetings. I try, I can do every day, but I try as much as possible. I have sponsors, I have contact with my sponsor, I do servers. And I really am grateful for the fellowship and for the AA for starting this all up. And it really changed everything in my life. So this new year, I thought, okay, what are my wishes for this year? And I thought, okay, the only thing I can wish for and want to wish for is less ego and more God. And that's the only thing that interests me really, is to be as close as I can with God in myself and around me, between me and other people, in my relationships, in my behavior to strangers, to everybody, to the world. I'm not interested in success anymore. I'm not interested in money anymore. And of course, those are old habits. And we call them character defects. And they come up. And definitely they come up. But I really got an immense toolbox with my 10th and 11th step that I can always, as soon as I get greedy or fearful that I'm not enough money or this company or that commission or all the mess, all the drama, I try to give it away. I try to feel it. I try to let it go by giving it away. I do a lot of spiritual things apart from the groups and the program. I really like Course in Miracles. I must say it. I did this last year. I did the first workbook for the first time, and now I'm doing it for the second time. And it's, I think it's an amazing, how do you say this, extra on top of the big book, because there is so much the same. I like still Taoism a lot, so I come here so as much as I can to talk about the Tao Te Ching. I love to read in it, so I go back to this like literature. I do the Bible. I read a little bit the Course in Miracles. I read and the Tao Te Ching. I read and guys like Michael Singer and Eckhart Tolle. I listen to it a lot. So I really know, okay, this is, for me, spirituality is the solution. God is the solution. And I have to work on this, because otherwise the voices in my head go, I'm going to believe the voices in my head if I don't, on a daily basis, continuously pray and meditate and listen to people, open up to new things. Let new things come, like in the form of books or people or podcasts. I'm really open to that, and I really enjoyed it. So it's a big part in my life. Yeah, that's it, I think.
Thank you, Oscar. I have a few questions for you, though.
Yeah, of course.
You're on such a roll, I didn't want to interrupt you much. I can see how when you said that you read your first Taoist book, how that resonated with you. I felt the same way. And I was amazed when I found out it didn't resonate with everyone in recovery. There's some that just said, what are you talking about? Yeah. But it's just not the way God speaks to them. It's just not, and that's great, because we can all have our same God language, love language. We all have different love languages. So it doesn't matter as long as we find it. So as long as we find how to connect. How do you think you said that the Eckhart Tolle book showed up for you. How do you think those things work? I know you see it. Do you see it daily in your life? I see it daily in mine, or almost daily, that I recognize it. I think it's happening all the time, whether I recognize it or not. But I notice it very often now about how could this have happened? It could not be coincidence. It's too much.
How do you see that? Those are not coincidences. I don't believe in any coincidence. Okay. But with these books, it's really amazing sometimes that, for instance, I had the, what's it called? The Chinese book of...
I Ching, the book of Ching?
I Ching. That I had my whole life in my house. And suddenly there is an interest and I have it. So it was there all the time. And I know about the power of now that it's in a lot of people's life. People give it to each other as a present and they don't read it. But somebody else comes in the house and he takes it and they lay it. And at a certain moment, it is changing somebody's life or a course of life. And I heard also this amazing story about A Course in Miracles where it was... Or did you tell it? So somebody told me, maybe in a group somewhere, that A Course in Miracles, somebody was so sick of it and didn't understand it and got rid of it and threw it out of the car. And then later, she picked it up again and she came to a meeting and someone came in and it was a woman who had found the book, and by this book found, she got to know The Course in Miracles. So it's really, those stories, I love it. And I don't know how it works, but they...
But it does. That's the point. Yeah. We don't have to know how.
Yeah.
We just have to be open-hearted, like you were talking about, open-minded. I think a lot of times we're used in spite of ourselves.
Yeah. No. And also with the big book, I also heard these stories. That's also one, that, of course, that there are so many copies. And yeah, the ways, also when we do ninth step, for instance, when we do small, really small ninth steps, like you think, why should you do that? Still, I think it's important to do because you don't know where it's good for. You don't know. The one you're going to might have a nephew who has a brother who's an addict and gets to know the fact that there is a solution. So we don't know all these things. And I really like the idea that we don't know anything or what it's good for.
Not a thing. And when I give that up and I just look for the next loving action or the next right action, as we say, and leave the rest of it alone and try to keep within that moment, the rest of it takes care of itself. Regardless of how it goes, it's really beyond my control. So if I can keep within the moment, I can't orchestrate those things. I can't. What I think of as the greatest gifts in my life, I did not orchestrate in any way. I do have a, I don't know, but in the notes every week, I have a Course in Miracles calendar. It's a Google calendar you can import, and it has the daily lesson that you can add to your calendar, Google calendar. So anyone that would like that, it's in the notes and in every podcast. But yeah, I enjoy Course in Miracles too. Once you get past the vernacular, you get past all of the, what we think sometimes is that we have a hard time accepting sometimes all the Holy Spirit, Jesus talk, God talk, the way it's phrased. There's a lot, I get a lot out of Course in Miracles. I had to get past that though, because I didn't believe things worked the way they said, but I had to get past the language and look what was between the words. And I learned a lot of things there. When I defend, I'm inviting attack. those type things I really learned from Course in Miracles. Do you know how Course in Miracles started?
Yeah, no.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, it's insane.
This lady, she was looking for a better way for figuring out a conflict, and Jesus started speaking to her. This is her words. And he said, write down what I'm telling you. And she wrote the book in 7 years every evening. And another guy that she was asking about, could they find a better way instead of the conflict they were having at work? And she was she taught at, I forget the school, but a high-end Ivy League, I believe Ivy League school that she was in the religion department somewhere, I think. And she wrote it down for 7 years. And she never really studied it after that. It helped her, but she died of, I think, pancreatic cancer 10 years later in the early 80s, because this was in the late 60s to mid 70s that I think that this was going on sometime in there. And it's just crazy that, you know, and she just wrote it as she heard it.
She didn't know how big the book was going to be when she started.
No, she did. We don't know. We never know those things. So you found out about us through the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good.
I found it on Spotify.
I'm sorry?
I found it on Spotify.
Spotify, yes, yes. Good, good. What are you doing now? What's your current vocation?
At the moment, when I came from the rehab the first time, I stopped with theater.
Yes.
And I thought, what am I going to do now? And then I thought, television series have to be written too. And I really like television series. So I started to study this. And I quite fast rolled into this industry, and I developed myself as a television series writer. So that's what I do now.
Ah.
I write script.
Because I figured you were getting back to writing, because that's a gift. When you can write like what you talked about, even if you're in your addiction and you're writing, like, that's still a gift that you have. So I figured you were either back to that in some form again or going to be back.
Yeah, I'm back in it. Yeah, I've never been really out, only for 2 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. You talk about how you keep fit spiritually, all the things you do, but what's the one way that you connect spiritually that you say this is your, if you had to drop everything else, this would be the way you would connect. You have a primary, for me, that's meditation.
Yeah, silence. Silence.
Okay. All right. I was just curious.
Definitely silence. Yeah. Silence, and the second would be helping other people.
Yeah.
So when I'm good in silence, I'm connected. When I go out of the door and I am not able to help somebody with anything, then the silence is quite wasted.
Yeah.
So, it needs to avoid it becoming an ego trip, or me becoming a holy ego, or me doing all this meditation kind of guy. It needs to echo in my daily life. It needs to echo when I talk with my commissioners, with my colleagues, with my wife, with my children. It needs to resonate in my interactions. And a huge thing in this is being open to other people without self-interest or self-centeredness.
Yes. And for me, meditation is a training for the rest of the time I'm off the cushion. And if I can sit in meditation and notice, maybe in life I can do the same thing. And that place of noticing is a place without ego. That's a place where I'm not asserting myself. I'm just looking for a way to be helpful. And I'm just here. I'm here. Yeah. You know, Moses said to the burning bush, to God in the burning bush, he said, Hanini, which means I am here. Not anything more. What a gift, man. What a gift. Beautiful. Anything else to add, Oscar? That's been great. Thank you. Today, all my regulars called and texted me and said, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. And I said, okay. And then I said, I hope Oscar shows up. We can have a conversation. And when you showed up, I just thought, we're just talking for a minute. And I thought, maybe it'd be a good time to hear Oscar's story. But that worked out good. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you. I like it when you show up. You always have good things to add. I'm sure a lot of people get much out of what you share. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it, Oscar. Thank you for being here, sir. Thank you for your story. And I hope you have a great week. And we hope to see you and others next week. Thank you.
Hello, this is Buddy C. I wanted to make you aware of several recovery-related resources that I've posted in the episode description. These resources include a list of recovery podcasts, a free sober meditation app, daily recovery email, shared Google recovery calendars. Hope you put some of these resources to use and have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends in recovery.